The information presented on this program is not intended to take the place of your personal physician's advice and is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Discuss this information with your own physician or healthcare provider to determine what is right for you. Welcome to Sanitas at sanitasradio.com, because your health and longevity should not be classified information. And now, here's your host, Mel Fabregas.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Sanitas at sanitasradio.com. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home. And to listen to tonight's full interview, a very important interview, just go to sanitasradio.com and subscribe. It's your life. Take control. Did you know the top 10 cause of death in the world is heart disease? Do you want to learn how to detect and neutralize the hidden causes of heart attack and stroke and find out what the role of inflammation is in both diseases? Also, did you know there's a spice that has been used for thousands of years and has been shown to offer benefit to some 600 different health conditions, including Alzheimer's, depression, diabetes, and MS? One of the most remarkable things about the spice is that it does not have any side effects. It functions as an antioxidant, but also has antibacterial, antifungal, anti-inflammatory, antiviral properties. It can neutralize toxicity and has been used in integrative medicine approaches for cancer, making the effects of chemotherapy less harmful. I'm referring to turmeric. And to tell us about this and more, tonight's special guest is Christian Wild, an author and researcher who has appeared on hundreds of radio and TV shows. He has been a voice for adult stem cell research, documenting the progress since 2002. He has authored two landmark books, Hidden Causes of Heart Attack and Stroke, and Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair. He also authored the Christian Wild Stem Cell and Turmeric Research Report, covering progress in FDA trials for more than 87 catastrophic diseases. Christian has been supported by the directors of stem cell research, cardiovascular disease, and regenerative medicine at 11 major universities, including Columbia University of Utah, Minnesota, and UCSD. Before his endeavors into the medical arena, Christian was an independent songwriter and record producer for Warner Brothers, Columbia, Capitol, Emmy, United Artists, and MCA UNI Records. His website, myheartbook.com, which is also linked at ours. And directly from Studio City, California, I would like to welcome Christian Wild. Hello, Christian, and welcome to Sanitas. How are you?
Mel, it's a great morning here in Los Angeles. I'm glad to be on with you today, and let's get to it.
Well, I'm so glad that we finally got the interview done, but I'm so curious, how does somebody, a music producer, executive, how did you transition from that industry into what you do now?
Well, partly it wasn't by choice. It was necessity, which is the mother of all invention. I had had my annual physical. My doctor said, Chris, you're good to go. He said, you passed your thallium treadmill 100%. Your cholesterol is ideal, and you don't take any medication for it. He said, I don't need to see you for another year. And I said, well, that's great. And I said, Mort, as I was leaving, walking out the door, I turned and I said, nothing personal, but I have to ask you, because I've had so many friends or people I've known of who have been given a clean bill of health by their cardiologist, only to find out they passed away 3 days later on the golf course, or they went to bed one night and did not waken in the morning. He said, it happens all the time. He said, we physicians are in the business of saving lives. And when something like this happens, it's very distressing to us. And so I said, there's a scan just come on the market, and there is a scanner at UCLA, and I'm going to go out there and have that scan. And he said, Christian, you'd be the one person in my stable that I would say you don't need that scan. And I thanked him, and I left. Well, two friends of mine, two entertainers, matter of fact, one of them just finished his 50th tour of Japan. They're Hall of Famers. The group was The Ventures. Don is the only remaining of the group. But Don and Bob were in town, and we were doing some music together. And I said, you know, you two guys have broken every law of good health that was ever written. It's been like a conspiracy. You've broken every health law there has been. But I'd like to take you out to UCLA and have a coronary scan of your coronary arteries. It's non-invasive, takes about 5 minutes. They agreed. We arrive at UCLA, and they're filling out the forms, and they notice that I'm not filling out the form. And they said, aren't you going to get the scan? And I said, no, my doctor said I'd be wasting my money. He said, well, if you don't get it, we're not going to get it. So I get the scan. And they leave information for the radiologist to call me with their scores because they have to go back up to the Pacific Northwest. About a week later, I get a call from the cardiologist, and he says, I'm calling you about your EBCT scan. And I said, oh, yes. How did my friends do? He said, your friends did fine. It's you we're concerned about. I said, no, I think you may have gotten us mixed up. There were three of us. He said, you're Christian, right? I said, yes, I am. He said, you have a severe score. We're concerned. Pause. Okay, doc. What would you consider a severe score? He said, if your calcification in your coronary arteries is 400, you're at a 10-time immediate heart attack risk. And I said, okay, what's my score? He said, 1,778. And boy, that took me back. And it was hard for me to even accept that. So I said, what can we do about it? He said, well, I don't know what to tell you to do about it. Go to your regular doctor. So that started a research that took 5.5 years to write that book. First of all, Mel, I went out and grabbed a bunch of books on cardiovascular disease, heart disease. I was disappointed. They gave me the same lukewarm information, one after another, and then half the book was filled with recipes. And they talked about cholesterol, cholesterol, cholesterol. And early on, I came to the phrase, which I coined, it's in my book, 50% of all heart attacks happen to people with normal cholesterol. So what else is being missed? What is destroying the happiness of families all over the world? Because physicians have not come to speed on the hidden factors that are passed on from generation to generation. A great-grandfather dies of a heart attack. His son dies of a heart attack at an early age. And it gets passed on until you come to today. And if you don't find it in yourself, correct it, then you have to be concerned that your children also have inherited certain genetic factors that for the first time, if a physician knows where to look, they can find them. And so ironic, Mel, this morning when I open my computer, there's a big message right there. Know how to detect hidden test that could save your life. And they're the same ones I wrote about initially 15 years ago. So it's good to know that some of these things are now coming into mainstream medicine. And that one particular interview or review of the book said what Christian suggests today is destined to become standard medical practice in the next decade. And that was from a Dr. Gregory Guldner from Loma Linda University. So during the course of that 5 years, I would go in each year and have another coronary EBCT scan to see if I was in any way slowing that calcification buildup in my coronaries. It got, over 3 years, almost to 3,000, and then surpassed 3,000, keeping in mind 400 is a 10-time heart attack risk. So I started going from physician, cardiologist to cardiologist, and they would kind of throw their hands up. I'm not there yet, Christian. I haven't gotten to this information at this level. So finally, I started writing letters to different cardiologists and said, these are the tests that I've had. These are the blood work. This is the blood work. This is where I have gotten on my own. Can you take me beyond this? And one doctor was kind enough to write back. He said, Christian, you're reaching an area of sophistication that I am not yet at the level to deal with. And I thanked him for being honest. So in the course of the 5.5 years, I had one concern. If I'm going to help myself, I am going to help families out there who have no idea why their loved one just had a heart attack when they were told their cholesterol was perfect. Somebody else passed away and had a thallium treadmill 2 weeks before. And so to take the mystery out of it, I started concentrating more and more. In the book, I talk about, just to show your listeners, one little piece of information that you can take to heart, pardon the pun, 88% less chance of you having a heart attack. 88% less chance if you'll simply give blood to the Red Cross twice a year. That is a study that I came to from the Scandinavians. But there have been two or three others since then that confirm exactly the same amount, 88% less chance. Also, not only do you save your life, you save somebody else's you don't even know. So as the iron builds up in your blood and certain toxics, you need to get rid of them. Just like centuries and centuries ago, they believed in the letting of blood. Maybe they knew something there. So familiar heart disease and hidden genetic factors like LP little a, which your doctor doesn't test you for, at least once they should to find out if you've inherited that, because that gene will give you a 10-time heart attack risk. Cholesterol being too low. Doctors have gone crazy about cholesterol. It's like when the movie Jaws came out.
The sharks and the beaches.
Remember that, Mel?
Of course.
Everybody wanted to kill every shark in the ocean. They went into overkill. Well, they did the same with cholesterol. Your body requires cholesterol. You cannot live without cholesterol.
Your brain.
The brain. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because the brain requires a certain amount of integrity of the sheath that protects it. And therefore, if you break down that sheath, which requires cholesterol, then you hemorrhage into the brain. Another factor, too, is physicians have been prescribing cholesterol drugs without telling you you have to take coenzyme Q10. As a matter of fact, if you were in Canada, you could not get a prescription of a statin drug, any statin, if you weren't told that you have to take coenzyme Q10, the enzyme with it. When Merck discovered their first drug for cholesterol, which is lovastatin, Mevacor, they had gone to China to find out why they had such low cholesterol. They found out from the red yeast rice. But the man who was the head of exploratory research, Dr. Carl Folkers at Merck, said, we have a problem. This drug, as effective as it is depleting the muscle of the heart of coenzyme Q10, which it requires to keep its integrity. But they didn't tell you that you must take coenzyme Q10. I don't know how many people today listening are not aware that they need that. It can literally lead you into heart failure, as after years it breaks down the heart.
But not only the heart, it also reduces the effectiveness of other organs, because what it does is reduces the muscle mass. And what are the kidneys?
You're right. That's a good point. All of your muscles require that enzyme. So cholesterol can be too low. I have literally run into people where one was a doctor, and he said, "Do you know how low my cholesterol is, Christian?" And I said, "No." He said, "My total cholesterol is 100. I said, "Aren't you aware that you're putting yourself at great risk for hemorrhage, among other things?"
How about their IQ?
And yes, it affects the brain and all of its function. Now, we talk about stress. We're living in a time that the stress level throughout our day is at an extremely high level. And we've always heard stress is a killer. Well, I liken it to the fight or flight syndrome. But I liken it as an example to when you suddenly have to put your foot to the metal and hit the passing gear in your car to get out of a danger. That's kind of what your heart is doing when you, under stress, are projecting all of that hormone from the adrenal glands into your system. You are, in effect, acting as if the automobile situation. Now, if you keep your foot to the pedal, to the metal, you will literally burn out the engine sooner or later. And if you are constantly under stress, your body is putting out those hormones, those toxins, and it will have that similar effect on your body. And remember that the heart is a sympathetic organ. The kidneys are not a sympathetic organ, nor the liver. But the heart responds to human emotion, whether it be grief, joy, pain, loneliness, all of it responds to, the heart responds to. So all of that is important. We're not a machine. We're a human being. We're a miraculous piece of equipment, and we have to take care of it. But anger, hostility, physical exertion when somebody is out of condition increases your risk 6 times of a heart attack within 1 hour. If you have a severe bout of anger, as would be in road rage, within 1 hour of that exertion, you can have a heart attack. That's why so many heart attacks happen at those type of events. So cutting-edge blood tests that you're not given, unless you ask for them, I encourage everybody to have a CRP. I have for years. CRP is C-reactive protein. Mel, you noticed that the subtitle of my first book was Inflammation, Cardiology's New Frontier.
Right.
Because inflammation outside of your cholesterol, where all the concentration was, nothing is as important as your CRP and your inflammatory marker. Now, at that time, they were just starting to talk about inflammation. And one of the reviewers said that this is the first book that introduces inflammation's role in heart disease to the general public. But now, years later, we know that inflammation is the root cause of every one of the chronic diseases. And so we talked about the EBC coronary calcification scan. Somebody may want to do that just one time. I literally have taken people in, including my own attorney one time. I took him in. His cholesterol was 260. He was 40 pounds overweight. And I took him down, had the calcification test, and he had zero calcification. So there are things that I'm going to talk about that can create calcification, so that not everyone has it, but the only way you're going to know is if you have the test. There's a test called the, or a procedure called enhanced counter pulsation. And I think you had a guest on.
Sarah Salati.
That's the lady.
Yes.
And she's talking about it. And I have it in both my books. And I'll give you an example to your listeners. They're going to appreciate this, I think. Young man, 52 years old, heard me on a radio show about 4 months ago and contacted me and said, I am a no-option heart failure patient. I said, I understand. I know when they tell you that, what has been involved in the investigation. He said, there's nothing more that can be done for me. I am too weak to withstand open heart surgery. They've given me the ACE inhibitors, the beta blockers, and everything else that they can to help me. But they've told me, get your life in order. I said, well, that's not necessarily true. You may not be a no-option patient. I explained EBCT to him. I said, I want you to go back to them and challenge them. Tell them you would like them to enroll you in 17 treatments. Actually, there are 34, but if you want to double up, you can do them in 17. I'll explain briefly how it works. He went back, and in order to appeal, he had to go before a whole board of cardiologists at the insurance company, and he brought my books, and they said, okay, we'll let you have this. About the fourth or fifth treatment, he calls me and he says, you know, I see my veins in my arms. I see veins in my legs and I'm breathing better already. So he went completely through and his ejection fraction, which is the measurement of your heart output of the left ventricle, had increased significantly to the point where they've even agreed to let him do another series. Now, I guess 2 weeks ago, I had a conversation with him, and I said, you know, at this point, you might talk to them about a defibrillator. And if they will give you the defibrillator, try to get the combination of pacemaker and defibrillator. Because even though you have increased your ejection fraction, it is still at a dangerous level that you could go into sudden cardiac death. And if you can get that, I will then try to get you enrolled in one of the universities to have stem cells taken from your leg muscle or from a donor and inject it into your heart. There are several universities that I work with in that regard. As a matter of fact, the second book, Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair, is for all the patients. There are 5 million in the United States. There are 23 million worldwide who are dying of congestive heart failure with no hope of ever surviving. And in the book, you will meet people who, the first one, Jose Ramirez, my friend Dr. Warren Sherman at Columbia University in New York, in year 2000, performed the very first stem cell, autologous stem cell treatment to a young man who was 34 at the time, had had 4 heart attacks, had 11 stents. And I called him last week for the first time in years. He said, Christian, why haven't you called me? I said, to be honest with you, Jose, I didn't want to hear that your wife said you had passed away. And I'm so excited to know that after all these years, that's one treatment. He said, yeah, I've got 7 grandchildren. He said, I work 45 hours a week. All because of getting my stem cells in that minimally invasive 1-hour treatment. So I say to this young man I'm working with now, and this is not the main thing I do, but I can't help if I have some information that can help somebody, I do it. I'm not practicing medicine. These are the doctors that I'm sending them to. And so I said, the one thing I needed, I couldn't get you into a stem cell trial in your condition unless you had a pacemaker and you had a defibrillator, and he just got them. So now we move ahead and try to do that. Now, as the years have gone by and I've dealt with that calcification problem, of all the things I found, one was fibrinogen. In the Framingham Heart Study, at one point, they had said fibrinogen is as important as blood pressure and cholesterol, but no doctors have taken it seriously. Whenever I go to a phlebotomist to have blood work, one of my questions is, are you getting any orders for fibrinogen testing? And as of 3 years ago, they weren't. And now I hear, yeah, we're getting a few here and there, but it's a major factor. And it does create, fibrinogen does create calcification. And something else I found in all the research was that the UK did a study called the Whitehall 2 study. And they found out, and this is the first time you're starting to hear about it. I just heard something on the TV the other night. First time I've heard them talking about it. And they were saying that if you are under stress, yeah, stress is the killer. We've heard it over and over and over. Look at this connection. If you're under stress, your body is producing high levels of fibrinogen. Fibrinogen forms calcification. When the calcification leaves the bone, and this is a secondary thought, when calcification leaves your bone, because that is what it is, calcification is actually bone. So when it leaves your structure of your bones, whether it's your spine or your arms or whatever, it circulates in your system and looks for a place to reside. And it goes to the coronary arteries and takes up residence, causes the heart attack, closes the artery. Another thing, if any person were to have a slight bleed in an artery, fibrinogen, like a fireman, comes to the scene immediately.
To coagulate?
Coagulates, but it overdoes it. It overdoes it, Mel, and causes the heart attack because it just is more than is necessary because it's elevated already in your bloodstream. If it were a normal level, it would help that coagulation. It helps build a net for the coagulation to take place. So what are we concerned about here? We're talking about saving our lives and saving our families' lives. Wives, be concerned about your husbands. Husbands, be concerned about your lives, wives' lives, because after menopause, her risk of a heart attack may be even greater than yours. But there hadn't been enough. That was the first chapter I wrote, Women and Heart Disease. I couldn't believe it, that women were not getting the same diagnostics as were the men. They weren't being taken as seriously. So when they came to crisis, because they hadn't discovered their heart disease earlier, they were losing them. I forget what exactly the number was, but it was about 30% greater death rate among the women, and they did not survive the first year of a heart attack compared to the men. So we're talking about the heart, anger, hostility, stress, cholesterol. Let's talk about something positive. 3 months ago, a gentleman from Nashville called me and said, I'm a no-option patient, and I've heard you talk on the radio about no-option patients. And I said, what's the situation? He said, I need a heart valve, but they told me I wouldn't survive the surgery. So I'm to watch my diet, watch my cholesterol, and spend some time with my grandchildren. I said, wow, that's dire. You need a valve. Which valve do you need? I need an aortic valve. I said, well, let me look into that for you. I called my friend. He's a director of cardiology at Baylor University. He said, I said, what about the transcatheter valve? This is a little mechanical valve designed for patients whose health would not permit them to have open heart surgery to replace their valve. It's made by Edwards Life Sciences. It's called the Sapien 2. My friend said, can you get him to Dallas? And I said, I think so. If I can't, I'll help him. He comes in, he gets examined, sent home, and said, in 2 weeks, we'll call you. You're going to be the first one to get the new version of the Sapien 2. It's the Sapien 3. How exciting. Minimal invasive surgery. Probably 45 minutes to an hour. You do not open the heart. You do not go on the heart-lung machine. He comes in for the surgery. Surgeon goes in and says, ah, I see a tumor, what appears to be a tumor, on your mitral valve that disqualifies you for the surgery. Send him home. I said, this is terrible. I go back to the doc. Can we try again? He said, I'll tell you what. Let's put him on an antibiotic. See if in fact it takes it down, whatever. They bring him back in, and a very, very skilled surgeon looks inside and says, that is a benign tumor. We're good to go. And they give him a new valve. There are amazing things out there if you know where to search, if you are on the cutting edge, because the information that comes out of the research community is generally 15, 20, 25 years ahead of the practicing office. But that's one of the good news. I would tell you this one, too. If you were to ask, next time you have a blood test, have your physical, whatever, ask your physician if he wouldn't mind giving you a PV test. A PV stands for plasma viscosity. One of my big things is plasma viscosity. I say doctors will pay attention to the thickness of your blood if you've had a stroke or if you've had a heart attack. They should be checking on that early in your life to find out if you are producing very viscous blood. Don't wait until the heart attack or the stroke. So if you find out that your blood is very viscous, then you are more prone to having a stroke or a heart attack.
Now, why do you have to ask for it if it's such a critical test?
Mel, that is the million-dollar question. And I hear it, but when I first started writing the book, and I'd be, over coffee talking to somebody about these new tests that your physician doesn't even know about, and they'd be saying, why don't they? I said, well, I don't know. They're on such overload. They're being told what to do, what the format is, and they go accordingly to that. So there's another test, too, called a PLAC-2, PLAC-2. And that will tell you if you are building calcification. The other one, of course, is the EBCT coronary scan. Now, after all of these years, I'm starting to hear things about LDL. It's not really your LDL that's bad and dangerous. It's the type of LDL subfractions. It's the type of LDL particles your individual body is producing. Aha! I can go back 15 years ago. It's all over in the book. And Dr. Robert Sapirko at the Berkeley Heart Lab had done all of that research. And I have to give the credit to Dr. Paul Ritker, head of Brigham and Women's Hospital at Harvard, for developing the hsCRP blood test. Critical, critical test. I would not leave my doctor's office without getting that test the next time you're in there. And if you are elevated, and some of the things that can cause those elevations, smoking, gum disease, arthritis, lack of exercise, sedentary lifestyle. All of these things can raise that CRP level. They found out in the physician's health study that if you had an elevation in LDL cholesterol and you had an elevation in your CRP, over the next 6 years, you had a 300% chance of a heart attack. But if you were very high on your cholesterol, then your chance went up 600%. So checking that is very important. So as far as the heart is concerned, it is a sympathetic organ. It takes care of us. You know, that little organ, the size of a fist, beats in your lifetime enough blood to fill 3.5 Exxon oil tankers. Beats 100,000 times a day. We take it for granted, and at all time, we are one beat away from eternity. If that heart, like 300,000 people a year, die from sudden cardiac death. Studies have shown that fish oil can help in that regard. But giving blood twice a year, I think, is a really good endeavor.
I want to revisit that, Christian, because that took me by surprise. Because it's almost as if saying you need to replenish your body of new blood. Let your body produce new blood. Get rid of those toxins. But wouldn't those toxins go to the receiver of the donated blood?
Yeah, they filter that blood and process it. But that's a good question. That's a good, for sure. You know, they're very, very careful that you haven't been to out of the country. You might have had a Jacobson disease, Jacobson disease. They want to know. They'll ask you a myriad of questions. So I guess the question, you really make sure you don't get your own blood back, Mel.
Right.
See, I don't want that.
Okay, yeah. So explain the mechanism of our body. Once we donate some blood, what happens? You know, I guess explain the science behind the production of new blood and how it becomes better for our bodies.
Well, it replenishes. It doesn't take long. I think
the bone marrow.
Everything in our body was developed from our bone marrow, and that's why the stem cells that are showing the success are taken from bone marrow. Mesenchymal stem cell research. 3 years ago when I checked, there were 4,400 trials going on that the public isn't aware of. These are FDA trials using bone marrow stem cells. So to answer your question, your body just produces more fresh blood. And it's designed that way because if you were ever in the jungles thousands of years ago and you sustained a cut or a wound, which you did frequently, the bone marrow had to produce more blood to replenish you. So it is a natural process. But stem cells are an exciting thing.
Before you go there, I still want to stay on this part because I think it's critical. Just want to understand, right now our bodies have different mechanisms to get rid of toxins. You know, you have the sweat glands, you have urination, you have excretion, and so on. But with the blood, what is the best way, if you're not donating blood, and I'm not advocating people not to donate because I think it's great for the blood banks, but if you are not donating blood, how can you clean your blood from toxins?
That's what your kidneys are doing. And hopefully they're in good condition.
If they're in good shape, yeah.
Yeah, if a person goes into a kidney or renal failure, the reason they have to go on dialysis, because the kidneys can no longer do their function in regard to the blood. So taking care of the kidneys is very, very important. You know, we're going to talk about the wonders of turmeric because, Mel, as you and I have discussed, it is a phenomenon. And when we get into it right now, if it's a good time.
Sure.
We're gonna surprise a lot of people. You know, it's been used in China, as you said, for 4,000, maybe 5,000 years. It first appeared in Western literature in 1937, and finally, the documenting of its anti-inflammatory qualities were confirmed in about 1949. It is by far the most researched of all the pharmaceutical, the nutraceuticals, botanicals, or polyphenols. It goes by the different names. We know that at the end of the 12th century, Marco Polo, in his journeys to China, brought it back to his emperor. It's been a medicinal and dietary mainstay for, Pakistan, Africa, Thailand, Bangladesh. And importantly, as you said, and that's a good point, it bears repeating, there are some 5,600 peer-reviewed, published biomedical studies on turmeric and its component curcumin in just the last two decades. That's in the Library of Medicine database. 5,600 published biomedical studies. It's a tremendous amount of research. They also documented some 600 health conditions that are believed to benefit from the spice. The evidence is remarkable. So what I share with you tonight, today, is not based on my opinion, but on solid biomedical studies performed by the academic world. These institutions have no monetary interest in exploring the wonders of this spice. They could not patent it. Matter of fact, one pharmaceutical company tried fervently to get a patent on it many, many years ago, and they were told it is a spice.
Why would they even go there if they knew they couldn't do it? It's a natural product. It's a natural root.
Well, they'll try anything if they can make a buck on it.
If it sticks, yeah.
Yeah, if it sticks, it sticks. So these people have no axe to grind other than to prove and document the miracles that are attributed to this innocuous spice. Now, the multiple reasons this spice has gained this much credibility is because it has the ability to target many pathways and signaling molecules meeting and conquering a particular disease at multiple levels, such as cancer, which is a multifaceted disease, and you have to target it at different levels. So we can say curcumin amazingly has shown to exhibit antioxidant. I think you might have covered some of these, did you not? Yeah. Anti-inflammatory, antiviral.
Sure, certainly.
Antibacterial, antifungal, anti-cancer. And it's been really significantly, potentially effective against various malignant joint diseases, like so many of you are dealing with osteo and rheumatoid arthritis. Neurodegenerative diseases, and that would include Parkinson's, MS, and of course, Alzheimer's disease, which we are prepared to share some really valuable information with you, updated information. Dr. Andrew Weil, years ago, you know Dr. Andrew Weil.
Sure, right here in Tucson.
Yeah. And he said the therapeutic advantages of turmeric are too numerous to list. So, 70 government clinical trials have removed any mystery of how this spice is able to target and positively affect so many different health conditions, amazingly, without side effects like you brought up. That is, to me, the most amazing thing of all. Every drug that you see advertised on television, they spend 5 minutes telling you how it'll destroy your health from 50 different ways. And there are no side effects associated with turmeric when they've tested it as high as 12 grams. And nobody will ever need 12 grams. The only alerts are if you are pregnant, lactating, or thinking of becoming pregnant. If you have bile or gallbladder disease, and you still have your gallbladder. And they do caution that if you're on blood thinners, it does thin the blood a little bit. most of us need to thin our blood a little bit. Anyway, so.
How about hemophiliacs?
Uh-oh. I think you'd have a problem there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have a problem there. And balancing that is a lifetime chore. So here are some specific activities identified at the universities of how this spice and its component, curcumin, target and perform all of these amazing functions that help in arthritis and type 2 diabetes, neurological, neurodegenerative disease, depression, how it breaks the blood-brain barrier in a matter of minutes, because anything, any drug they've ever tried to develop to enter the brain has the problem of getting through the blood-brain protective barrier, but turmeric is able to do that. It builds neurons in the brains, modulates the neurotransmitter levels, serotonin, dopamine, particularly affecting Parkinson's, and they've used it. This surprised me. They've used it for depression in China for 5,000 years. So it does affect depression and mood. And when they tested it against Paxil, they found it performed better, but without side effects. Now, anyone who's dealing with depression, 1 out of 10 people in the country are, I wouldn't even presume to tell you to take turmeric in place of your current medications. Talk to your physician. It's a very serious balance. So with Alzheimer's, it counters beta amyloid plaque, the buildup in the brain, believed to be the hallmark of this degenerative disease. Why do all the scientists say that the lowest Alzheimer's in the world happens to be in India? But they also say the lowest cancer, and we'll talk about that, is in India. So in regard to degenerative brain disease, we know they're using it to treat traumatic brain injury, even head injuries among NFL football players, boxers, hockey players who have sustained damage to the brain, even children who have encountered and been subject to skateboard head injuries when they're younger, they too are being looked at as a potential patient for turmeric research. MS and Parkinson's, even stroke, cancer, LDL cholesterol, fibromyalgia, it goes on and on. So the question would be, I know a lot of people are thinking right now, how was it able to do that? How can one little spice do so many health conditions? Well, here it goes. It performs as an antioxidant, as an anti-inflammatory, probably the best. Antibacterial, to reiterate. Anti-infection. In India, it's immediately applied to any cut, any wound, or skin abrasion. It's an antiviral. It's an antifungal. It does kill fungus. It's antitoxic. This almost looks like somebody's making up a list, but it's not. It's all scientifically backed. It neutralizes toxicity, and is used more and more in co-therapy with chemotherapy and radiation. It's now pretty well universally recognized for its preventive anti-cancer activities, and it's recognized as a potent immune booster. And one of the most amazing attributes is that it functions as VEGF. What is VEGF? It is anti-angiogenesis, which simply means it has the ability to shut off the blood flow, starving the cancerous tumor. VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor. Now, Dr. Agarwal, he's the world's undisputed leader in turmeric research. He's been a mentor to me, and I'm very grateful. He is at MD Anderson, and years ago, he had already stopped breast cancer from metastasizing to the lungs, where it normally seems to want to go. Another important role for this spice is that even the American Cancer Society acknowledges that it does kill cancer cells, and it does it without harming the good cells. It's a process smell called apoptosis. I know you know about it, called cell death.
Sure.
And we all know chemotherapy kills both the good cells and the bad cells at the same time. So over 70 government clinical trials have removed any mystery of how this works.
So turmeric discriminates versus radiation and chemotherapy that do not.
Exactly correct. And they're using it now with chemotherapy and with radiation. They call it a chemosensitizer. It literally sensitizes the tumor so that there is a better result arrived when they do the chemotherapy or the radiation. So the specific activities that the universities, academic centers explain are diabetes 2, how it functions in neurological, neurodegenerative. And of all these things, it's endless. It's just absolutely endless. Now, here's a question I want to throw out there. With the billions of dollars spent on research year after year, why has modern science, in spite of their dedicated efforts, and nobody's questioning that, they are sincere, obviously, in their efforts, but they still have not significantly delivered on the promises to eliminate the human suffering, premature death, from various diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, diabetes, of course, cancer, when at the same time, the country of India, for centuries, has had the lowest rates of chronic diseases like Alzheimer's, like cancer, compared to anywhere in the world. So the question is there something to be learned from the Indians, from the Chinese? Is there something to be gained for all of us from integrated medicine, the two worlds working together? And after we get a cursory view of this enormous body of documented evidence today from our discussion for diseases like MS, Parkinson's, etc., at a given point, we might ask ourselves if this spice, which has almost zero side effects, were integrated more with traditional medicine, might those all elusive cures the researchers seek year after year, would they not come a lot sooner, or in a perfect world, not be needed at all? As the old saying goes, Mel, you know that saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Point of fact, no one, and certainly not me, certainly not the FDA, is saying turmeric is a cure for any condition. As a matter of fact, at this point, they have not approved it for anything.
I was going to ask you, I have the financial statement here for the American Heart Association for the fiscal year 2014. I'm not going to get into boring details, but they obviously collected millions and millions of dollars. They have collected millions of dollars since 1924 when it was founded. Mm-hmm. If you were to call them and ask them how much of your research has found that turmeric helps with heart disease, since it's the number one cause of death in the world, would they answer that question?
If I could talk to the right person, and I'm sure they would, in their database, they would have that information. It's pretty hard to deny, like we talked about, 5,600 individual studies. And when you look at those studies, you'll find probably 4 or 5 PhDs contributing to each one of those, MDs and PhDs. So you know the source and the integrity and quality of the contributors is at the highest level. Yes, another thing I didn't say. Cardiomyopathy is enlargement of the left ventricle. As a matter of fact, we'll take a second on that. As people wonder, what happens in heart failure? Well, the heart, first of all, if there is calcification on the aortic valve, what generally happens, the heart pumps the blood up through the aortic valve and back through and through the body. If there's calcification building up on that valve, it never closes correctly. It's like calcification in a kitchen sink on the faucets. And you know you have to just squeeze it so hard to get it to, and you still get a drip. Well, that's called, in cardiovascular disease, that's regurgitation. That's a leaky heart valve. So the left ventricle is having to work twice as hard to pump twice as much blood to get through that left valve because it's coming backward as it regurgitates. It's a good choice of a word to describe it. And what happens now, Mel, is that left ventricle enlarges. It gets bigger. And therefore, it's weak. And eventually, it will not pump at all. They found out at the University of Toronto that turmeric shrinks the enlarged heart. Well, they did that in animal studies. But what they find in animal studies, of course, is the first thing they do. So that's an interesting piece of information, I think. And in heart failure, patient who's had a heart attack or a series of heart attacks, some of these people I've worked with have had seven heart attacks, others have had five. Had another fellow, tried like 3 years to get him stem cells, and he was turned down at two universities because his lungs were bad. Finally was able to get him a full heart transplant. And 5 months later, he's riding his motorcycle and gets in an accident. Oh, God bless him. Gets in an accident, is paralyzed, left side of his body. But he's got a new heart, so that's the good news, I guess. So, Mel, I want to share with you, there are, according to the CDC, there are 29.1. This is going to be extremely, extremely practical information. And the second I say the name of this disease, your listeners will be able to relate to it, unfortunately, but it's a fact. According to the CDC, there are 29.1 million in the United States with full-blown type 2 diabetes. Another 8.1 million in pre-diabetes who probably don't even know they have it. So the question is, could turmeric make a difference? Now, if someone has diabetes, the implication to heart disease is almost a given. The Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry carried results of a study that confirmed that, in fact, turmeric can benefit diabetics. And they found that turmeric could prevent diabetes from developing, and people with diabetes who took a curcuminoid supplement, turmeric supplement, dramatically lowered their glucose level and insulin resistance. Now, that is for type 2 diabetes. Another study for type 2 that'll probably make you real happy. In this particular study, the participants were given 300 milligrams of curcumin turmeric extract for 3 months, and they had shown significantly improved blood glucose and A1C levels. I could give you many more, but those are two, and then I'll give you one right here. It was published in the Journal of the American Diabetes Association, and they explained that turmeric extract, look at this, was 100% successful at preventing pre-diabetic patients from ever transitioning to become type 2 diabetics. So, of the 240 patients who had been given just 250 milligrams of curcumin extract, or the same number who got placebo over a 9-month period, turmeric, for those who received the turmeric, had a 100% effectiveness in not becoming diabetics.
Hold it right there, Christian, because we have to break both segments into two, and you have so much more to discuss when we come back. But I'm so perplexed with the amount of information that you have provided to me here. I knew about turmeric, but not as much as I know now. I have all the research reports that you sent me so kindly here, and I'm looking at cancer and I'm looking at heart disease, the two biggest monsters when it comes to health and the causes of death. And I just keep wondering why heart and cancer industries are not really looking into this. And I hate to say it, folks, and you know where I'm coming from here.
No
revenue.
Money.
Exactly. No money. I have to say it. We have to be brave and say it.
Yeah.
When we come back, let's discuss more of this. I also want to revisit the stem cells because that's another frown upon modality that some people just, there's a lot of misunderstanding out there.
Misunderstanding. You've got the right word.
They think that we're just aborting babies on purpose in order to get this. And believe me, folks, I appreciate life. But also, you can do that yourself from your own, or if you have a baby, just store the stem cells from the umbilical cord, correct?
Yes, and we're going to have a lot to talk about Alzheimer's. I'm going to bring you some information that you will never have heard before. And I want to thank all of you out there who have supported my Christian Wild enhanced turmeric formula. It's been just word of mouth. It's gone crazy.
I'm waiting for you to get your shipment so you can send me some samples because I want to experience it too. Also, your website, and how can people buy your books and learn more about your products, Christian?
Yeah, I get myheartbook.com. It's all on there, myheartbook.com.
Excellent. And the products, same website?
Pardon me?
The products, the turmeric, any other items that you sell on your website too?
Yeah, we got my lecture on Alzheimer's, my lecture on cancer at the 41st Cancer Convention, and turmeric. It's all related to turmeric. My stem cell research reports, which you have, and I put a lot of love in those. And then my two books, Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair. I'm giving you a special, your listeners, if they want both books, Hidden Causes of Heart Attack and Stroke. And my CD. Ah, boy, I'm being a real salesman here, Mel, but my music is on there, too. If you want to listen to it, you can. So we're having a good time. We're sharing some valuable information. You've only heard part of it. And when you're ready to go, let me know.
Wonderful. Folks, don't go anywhere. I'm Mel Fabregas from Sanitas. I'm here with my special guest, author and researcher Christian Wild, releasing a lot of information that I guarantee that you won't listen to in the mainstream media. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to the first segment of this very important Sanitas interview. If you enjoyed it and wish to listen to the rest, go to sanitasradio.com, click on members or subscribe, or tell someone else who will enjoy this and all our radio programs. If you're listening on YouTube, like, subscribe, and share it. Don't forget to visit the Sanitas store, where you can purchase pure organic sulfur, supplements, a USB drive with all our shows, gift certificates, rebounders, and much more. Now, join me in the Sanitas member section to enjoy the rest. Thank you.